Good morning, everybody. Welcome to the WPTF Weekend Gardener. I'm Mike Rayleigh, and we have Gerald Adams on with us, sitting to my right over here. Morning, Gerald. How you doing?
I'm back.
Yeah, you are. Thank goodness. Dadgummit. Sold every tomato in the world out at the farmer's market, didn't you, or plant?
I sold a lot of plants.
Yeah.
About 40% more than last year. So it was.
And what else do you have?
So I had tomatoes, peppers, eggplant, squash, cucumbers, zucchini, watermelon, cantaloupe, just any summer vegetable plant. But tomatoes are the biggest part.
Absolutely, and that's why we have Craig LaHoulier on this morning. Craig, how is everything in Hendersonville this morning?
Things are splendid. Hello, everybody, and good to hear you, Gerald.
You too, Craig. I bet it's a little cooler up there than it is here.
I don't know if I dare say it. When we wake up in the morning, it's 58 degrees, 60-ish.
Oh, no.
Wow.
And we hit a high of about 84, and in the shade, it feels like about 76. So we're actually dry, but other than that, we're having the most delightful stretch of weather here. But I look at your temperatures out there, and I feel for you.
Yeah. Well, we are dry, too, but we're way, way, way hotter than that.
Yeah, I was at Beach Mountain 30 years ago, and it was 100 degrees in Raleigh, and it was like 71 on top of Beach Mountain and relatively low humidity, so it felt quite different. It's tough on everything down here, including the tomatoes, Craig and Gerald. And, you know, I saw our friend Tom Campbell yesterday. It's over at his house, and his plants are looking pretty good. But he had one that he was a little concerned about. There was some yellowing on some of the lower leaves, and they look pretty dry. They're all in containers, so... You know, it's how much do you water? Do you you know, you don't want to overwater, but they need water.
Is it
the wilt?
in containers, you literally can't overwater because anything the plant doesn't need will just run out the bottom. So one of the biggest risks of growing in straw bales in containers is assuming that it's like growing in the ground where you can have a store of water available. So I'm watering deeply in the morning here. And I'm all in straw bales containers. And then I'm going out after dinner and doing a modified watering, a little bit lessened, because I want the plants to have good moisture overnight as well. So it's and, you know, you mentioned Tom. I've really enjoyed my email exchanges with him.
He's a renaissance man. He really is. He's one of my favorite. He was my boss 40 years ago here, and he's done so much. Of course, known all over North Carolina from NC Spin and his commentaries, and he's just like a brother that I never had.
What's great is I'm kind of playing his personal tomato consultant, which I love to do. I'm doing that to a whole lot of people all over the country right now. And Gerald, I'm really happy to hear about the seedlings because I push anybody who still thinks I'm in Raleigh, they send me a note and then I push them your way.
I can't tell you how many say, I used to get plants from Craig. And I said, well, Craig has retired and is living life easy up in the mountains now. It's been great. You know, I retired the first of the year from the university, so I had a little more time to devote to it, and I had put up another greenhouse, so I grew way more plants this year than I've ever grown before, and but dog if I didn't sell all of them, so it's been a interesting experience.
Yeah.
You know, I think the hardest thing has been going through this garden season without our mutual friend Ralph, because gardening always meant having a few chats with Ralph on the phone and sharing seeds, so gardening gives you lots of chances to be introspective and to think about those good friends that you've lost through the years.
Who was Ralph?
Great guy.
Yeah, one of our mutual friends and a retiree who was another fellow tomato fanatic.
Oh no!
And is always trying things. Had a little greenhouse in his backyard.
How about that? It's a real community.
Yeah,
isn't it?
Did a lot of volunteer work at Arboretum here, and it's funny you say that. So he had a mutation or something in one of his plants, and named it the Ralph's Line Mocha, and I still sell it, and I had it this year, and I've got some people that it's on their list when they come.
Does it taste like chocolate?
It looks kind of like chocolate stripes. It's kind of a green and a reddish brown color, and a nice size slicer, and a very good tasting one. So I think about that, Craig, every time when I'm sowing those seed trays and potting those up.
Yeah, when we moved, he gave me cuttings of some petunias and some salvias, and I keep them going all the time. And that kind of, you have a little piece of Ralph grow in your garden. And, you know, I do the same. My dad had some seeds that I grow every year, and it makes gardening that much more special because it gives you a chance to think about people that have really meant a lot to you through the years.
Well, we have, my little prompter here is not connecting. Do we have Rufus on? Okay. Brother Rufus, good morning. You're on with Craig LaHoulier and Gerald.
I just come off of the mountain. It was 62 degrees in Boone. I'm in county, and it's 72. And you were talking about tomatoes. Gerald, I just ate my first Gerald's Lightning, and it was wonderful, excellent. The other Rufus tomato, and I haven't had Craig's yet because, Craig, we had to do a little trick on you this time. I gave the seeds to Gerald to help me.
Yep.
Yeah, I'm growing them out for him, and I've got the plants are looking good. I got them planted a little late because I was so hectic hauling plants back and forth to the market, but they're looking good. It won't be too much longer, and I'm growing them in containers.
Yeah, and Gerald, don't be troubled about the white on the foliage for the Rufus Rainbow because that was bred to have variegated leaves.
Yeah, I figured that out early on.
We made it as fancy as possible because Rufus is such a fancy guy, right?
Can't help but stand out.
Yeah. And Rufus, I thought your we were out there last Saturday. I thought your tomatoes were looking good, your plants.
Oh, absolutely. I haven't had any kind of disease yet, and I'm knocking on my wooden head right now. Brown leaves bottom, and it's just like Gerald and Craig say, pull them off.
Yeah.
Well, one of the things that you tend to find when we have it this dry, it seems like the tomato diseases are not quite as prevalent. But unfortunately for us here, we're going to have all this 90-degree weather now, and many of the varieties, the pollen will dry up and they won't fruit. So with the good comes some bad.
Yep. I always tell people if it's going to be hot, go out and flick your blossoms gently with your finger every day and get that pollen moving. And even try to create a little bit of a microclimate around the plant to drop the temperature if you can. Use shade cloth maybe 6 feet from the plant just to drop the temps. But people growing cherry tomatoes and medium-sized ones aren't going to have nearly the trouble as those that are after the big beefsteak types.
I had some sun gulls. Tom had a little bowl of sun gulls sitting there, and we were eating them like grapes or, you know, whatever, cherries. They were wonderful. It's a, you know, such a wonderful plant, a fruit, but it sure is temperamental.
Well, they get big and they make a lot of fruit, and it's funny, even as many people that are heirloom fanatics like myself, it's one of the few hybrids that I still grow every year.
Exactly. I've given it a whole straw bale to itself and caged it, and I'm not pruning it at all because my wife for 5 years here has complained that I always stick the cherry tomatoes in the worst part of the garden. and she was absolutely right because they're cherry tomatoes.
Yeah.
But they're front and center. Egg yolk, sun gold, Mexico midget.
Right. Tough to make a sandwich out of a...
Happy wife, happy life.
Amen. Amen.
Hey, it's worked for 44 years, so I'm not going to change a thing.
That's wonderful.
I'm only at 42.
49 for me.
We're all doing great. This is wonderful.
Yeah. Rufus has been married a long time, too. Rufus, so you had something to do with the Horn in the West? Is that why you were in Boone?
Well, that's true. We had the 42nd season for the Horn in the West, the outdoor drama. It's the third oldest drama in North Carolina. First is, of course, Matty O. Next is Under These Hills. And then the the Horn of the West tells the story of the Revolutionary War and what the mountain folks had to do with it.
And you were an Indian or a Native American, right?
Yeah, Native American and Redcoats.
Oh.
Fighting the British. And I was in the play one time. And I hate to tell this to the radio audience. I was in the play one time when I was a senior in high school, and I was playing an Indian, and we had these little things called breech cloths, and all of a sudden I hadn't tied mine on securely. Body.
They came right down, huh?
Thank goodness it was dark. Nobody saw me begin with. And, I told that last night, and I had a few giggles in the audience.
I bet.
But Greg, I thought of you last week. The latest issue of Our State magazine has the ice cream trail in Hendersonville.
Yep. Oh, yeah.
That sounds dangerous to me, Craig. Y'all got a lot of ice cream shops there?
So I think Hendersonville... Per capita, we have ice cream shops, microbrews, and coffee shops in absolute abundance.
Oh, wow.
Like any of those. Some nights we'll go down, watch music, just have a pint of beer, and then go and have an ice cream cone, and that's our meal, a beer and an ice cream. That's dinner.
Man. My doctor would flip out.
Well, we don't tell our doctors.
I tell my doctor everything. I walk in and bow my head with shame.
I'm so busy between my garden in the backyard and our hiking and the other garden at the Veterans Farm nearby that I think I'm undoing some of the occasional not so good that I do to my body. I'm outside maybe from 8 or 9 in the morning till 6 or 7 at night, pretty much every day. So,
well, let's kind of go through. I know people want to talk to y'all, and let's kind of go through what we need to be doing. And we talked a little bit about watering. What kind of watering do we need to do? Twice a day, and at the bottom of the plant, and or drip irrigation, or what? But go through all of those things that we need to be doing to keep these plants healthy.
Yeah, kind of all of the above. Gerald, why don't you start it? What's your watering philosophy?
Well, for me, I move my stuff around every year so I don't set up a drip stuff for it. I water them deeply in the morning, and once it gets to 90 degrees or either plants are big enough that they're, you've got fruit that are getting close to maturing, I'll come back and water them again, late afternoon, probably 6 o'clock. The one thing you try and tell people is don't get that plant wet right before dark.
because tomato plants stay in wet overnight, and our heat and humidity, you're creating a laboratory to make fungal diseases. So that's the one big mistake. And people, some people are scared to death about, they're afraid they're going to overwater. Well, as Craig mentioned earlier, in the container that's draining well, which is, you know, you have to have one that drains well, you can't water them too much. And if you've got it in a raised bed and proper soil in the raised bed, it's difficult in a raised bed to water one too much.
Exactly.
It's better to err on the side of maybe you think you're giving it too much water than the other side of it definitely not giving it enough, because the plant will abort blooms and all kinds of bad things will happen if you're not giving it enough water.
Yeah. The way I think about what a plant is doing right now, and here we are in June, my plants have been, well, late June, my goodness, I don't know where the month went. My plants have been in since early May, and so pretty much everybody listening, your plants are growing upward, putting out foliage, putting out blossoms, setting fruit, probably getting to the point where they're starting to ripen fruit, and they're fighting diseases, and they're fighting critters. So this is the time to spend a lot of time in the garden, looking at your plants, finding the issues, but really making sure they're well-fed and they're well-watered, because you're trying to get away from letting the plants experience the stress, which leads to the blossom end rot issues, the diseases starting in the bottom of the plant. So, Gerald, I've always thought that tomatoes are not the crop to plant and then take a nice long vacation and then come back and expect to see a nice big harvest. They really like you to spend time with them, don't you think?
Oh, yes, most definitely. Just like yesterday, I'm watering yesterday morning, and I look at a plant, and it, you know, it looks like something has gotten some of the new growth, the leaves. And I'm like, well, I'm fenced in where I'm growing them, so it wasn't a deer. I look at the plant more closely, and I find a hornworm about the size of my index finger on it. So I introduced him to the bottom of my foot and had a little celebration over that, and that got me looking at all the rest of them more closely. But fortunately, that was the only one I found. But one of them, and, you know, two or three days with you not paying attention can do a tremendous amount of damage.
Why are we seeing I haven't heard a lot of people talking about wilt diseases this year. What would on earth would be the difference in this year and last year or the year before?
Humidity and rainfall, probably, don't you think, Gerald?
Yes.
Yeah, because it's been dry.
You know, I tell people all the time, you know, I've lived here my entire life, just grew up outside of Knightdale, and June used to historically be one of the driest months of the year, and I remember that because of having to carry irrigation pipe because of boarding to tobacco, all that, you know, all my childhood up through college. And, you know, if you go back and look the last 4 or 5 years here in the Triangle, most of the years we had above average rainfall in May, and it carried over to the first couple of weeks of June. And if you go talk, if you get 100 people and talk to, you'll find out that the tomato disease issues were worse because of that. But this year here in the Triangle, looks like we're back on that dry June. And I've had some people send me some disease pictures, but nowhere near what sent me the last couple of years.
Yeah, and one of the things also to notice, we Rufus noted this, it's cool here in the morning, and the humidity is a little elevated. And so when I go out look at my tomato plants at 6 or 7, they are heavily covered with dew. That's moisture. So you can do your best to keep that, to water at the bottom of the plant, keep the foliage dry. But the dew is a way to wet the leaves, and there's not much you can do about it. But don't think you're out of the woods, because I am starting to see the little telltale brown specks of septoria leaf spot, or the telltale little gray-yellow bullseyes of early blight. And I've even got one plant this year with something called pith necrosis. So it's always something with tomatoes, but make sure you ask somebody who knows about tomatoes what's affecting your plant, because there's got to be 20 viruses, 20 bacteria, and 20 fungus that can all get to it. But in our area, there's only maybe a half a dozen that are the real bad actors that you have to worry about.
Rufus, do you think you have pith necrosis on pith necrosis on your plants?
I had last winter, and I was talked a lot about it. I think that Craig was just discussing
how to do due diligence. I've been to since along about 3 o'clock. I have a park whopper girl. They get a huge 20-gallon pot on a patio that gets very, very hot about 3 o'clock, and I noticed that it would just not wilt, not the bad wilt, but wilt down, and my wife would be paralyzed. She said, your plant's dying. Well, that was just very natural. And I did learn this, that it's better to put a couple bricks under it, and it might take away some of that huge heat that comes off of a patio. Every pot I've got, I don't have it directly on the ground, and I guess that is the proper way to do it for you two tomato gurus.
Well, you know, tomato roots can get through the bottom of pots, and even in my yard with the straw bales, they will eventually, unless you put a landscaping cloth down, get into the soil. So if you think you've got issues in the soil, anything you can do to keep the roots from easing into them will probably do a little bit better if you do have wilt disease in the soil.
Well, I think it has something to do with maybe air circulation. When I put two layers of brick under each other, they should have done better.
This happened to cool off the bottom of the pot.
Airflow underneath and things like that.
All right, we got to take a break for news, and we'll be back with all of these great gentlemen and talking tomatoes this hour here on the Weekend Gardener. Gerald will stay with us. Rufus will. I don't know how long you're going to be able to stay with us, Rufus, but Craig will be here until 9 o'clock. And so get your tomato questions in here on the Weekend Gardener, 919-860-9783. More coming up here on WPTF. Back on WPTF, Mike Raley here, Gerald Adams, Rufus Edmonston in the car, and we got Craig LaHoulier from Hendersonville, who has written a couple of books, and you're still working on a third, right, Craig?
Yes, we'll just say I'm still working on it.
Okay. Epic Tomatoes is of course the best known. Also, straw bale gardening. You wrote about vegetables and how you incorporate that. So we have Craig on until 9 o'clock, and brother Tom Campbell is also with us. We got three people on the phone, so I don't know how this is going to sound. Rufus, for a while you sounded like a Rocky Mountain radio station back in the 60s with the echo. I don't know. I think you were going through a holler in Wilkes County. Tom, how's everything, buddy? You getting somebody to this conversation?
Listen, I have thoroughly enjoyed the show this morning, and I hesitate to interrupt the great conversation with
No, you. No, we won't call, sure.
Well, but I do have two questions of Craig and or Gerald. I got to tell you, as on the air, Craig, as I've told you in person, your Epic Tomatoes has become almost like a Bible to me.
It has. He's bought a bunch of them, Craig, and given them to relatives and friends.
I mean to tell you, anytime anybody wants to talk to me about tomatoes, I tell them they got to buy Epic Tomatoes, or I buy them a copy of it myself.
That's very kind, Tom, and it's been so nice to meet you. I really enjoyed our email exchanges. Thank you.
Well, I have two questions for y'all. One is, Craig, interestingly enough, you talked about starting tomatoes from seed, and so I was not sure that I was collecting the seeds and drying them properly and so forth like that. So I decided that I would take some out of a Cherokee Purple, and I dried them, and I started them in a little pot, starter pots, and they are now about 3 inches tall. Is it too late to try to plant them? Will they get any fruit before October?
They should, very much. Gerald, you being in that area, that's kind of a succession planting approach. And I would think it's you don't get your first frost probably until November or so. So what do you think, Gerald?
Yeah, you've got a good chance on that, Tom. I usually tell people if they're going to try to do going to plant them in early July, to do some of the varieties that mature a little quicker and can take a little heat. That's the biggest problem facing the Cherokee Purple. That plant's going to grow up and it's going to be trying to make fruit in August, which is typically the hottest month of the year. Fours here. But no, I don't think you're too late to get some fruit this year. And it's rare for us to have a frost before October the 31st. And some years it's maybe up to November 10th before that happens.
Well, good. I think the
other thing working for you, Tom, is Cherokee Purple being pretty much adapted to this latitude, hailing from Tennessee, seems to set fruit quite well in hot conditions and withstand diseases when compared to many, many of the other heirlooms. So I think if you're going to do this, I think you pick the right variety to give it a try to.
Well, I've got some nice big fruit on it. I mean, I'm really pleased. It's been fun learning how to do all of this, but that Cherokee Purple that I planted, and by the way, I took the seeds from one that I bought from the farmer's market, Gerald, so... I think they'll be all right. The other question I've got is, I took your advice and I bought one of these soil moisture meters, and I've tested the soil around my tomato plant, and you said that they like a pH of around 6.5 to 7. Mine is low. What do I do to bring it back to a more alkaline situation? What do I put on it?
How much lower is it? Are we kind of in the 3-4 range, 4 or 5? Where are you at?
4 or 5, low 6.
Oh. A little bit of granular, just maybe a tablespoon of granular lime worked into that soil and watered in. Wait a week, retest it, but that should sweeten it up. But yeah, I would try to get it up at least till around 6 to minimize the chance of getting blossom end rot on the fruit.
The other sub question of that is, how often do I feed them? I've got some 5-10-5 fertilizer. How often should I feed them?
And these are in containers, you say?
Yes.
If you're watering quite heavily, I would try every week and a half to 2 weeks. And if the plants look like the foliage isn't as lustrously dark green as you want, and you're not getting the flower production, maybe bump it up. I feed weekly, but I'm using a water soluble that, and each of the plants gets about a cup and a half of that solution that I mix up. It's blue stuff. And, it has the NPK in it, and 1 week application seemed to make my plants happy. But put 100 gardeners in a room who love tomatoes, and they're going to feed their tomatoes 100 different ways. So for me, it's not exactly what they're getting; it's that they're getting it. Tomatoes are pretty hungry. Gerald, what do you think about this?
Yeah, I do something very. I use water soluble fertilizer as well. It works faster. It's easier to, account for how much you're putting to them. I alternate Epsom salt in at a tablespoon per gallon of water as well. But I'm putting something to them about every 10 days. I slow down once I start harvesting fruit. But a lot of it is looking at the plant, how green it is. Some varieties just make a bigger plant and take a little more food. But that's another thing that people overlook that are growing in containers. The containers, because of how they drain so much better, you're watering them so much more, require fertilizing more frequently.
Exactly.
Good to know. Craig, to start this year, back in March, I bought some packets of seeds, and I said, well, I'm going to get into this. I'm going to learn how to grow tomatoes. I put those darn things in those little starter module containers and had a grow light. doggone, if all of them didn't come up. I gave away over 90 tomato plants.
you are on the verge of the addiction.
Yes.
Yeah, it sounds like it to me.
When are you putting up the greenhouse in the backyard, Tom?
I got a reprieve from my wife to be able to put 14 pots. I'm taking this a little bit at a time. But I have become addicted. I do think that.
Yeah. You know, for those of us who really do love this, it does become a passion. But it will only hit one people in 1,000 or one people in 10,000. So like every other hobby, you know, you may or may not get into it. But if you get into it, watch out. Your wife may have to become much more understanding.
Well, now you have to learn to make your own mayonnaise and your own bread.
I don't have to go that far.
You don't have to do that. Okay, well.
Yeah, we're not going back to colonial.
I don't know. Oh, fresh bread and baking in the morning? My goodness. Doesn't take much to make mayonnaise.
Mike, I am getting ready to have some country ham for breakfast.
I hope it's good, Tom. I was a little concerned. I was thinking on my mother's terms. She liked it a certain way, and I just wanted to make sure it wasn't too dry. But let me know if it's no good. I bought a ham. I bought a whole ham yesterday. Gave some to Tom. I should have brought some to you, Gerald. I'm sorry.
Dry ice, mayo. Come on, man.
Ham is ham. Country ham is country ham. You know,
I know.
Guys, I'm going to sign off. I love listening to you. It's been an entertaining show, and I'll sign off and listen to the rest.
You're hungry. All right. Yes. Go make some eggs and ham. Biscuits, even if they're canned. Thank you, Tom.
Yeah.
Bye. Yeah, canned biscuits. That's all right with me. So, Rufus, are you still with us?
Well, I was. I couldn't hear Tom very well.
Yeah.
But I heard all that talk, and I wanted to ask tell Craig and Gerald that I had some old leftover 10-10-10. That's okay for a tomato, isn't it?
Yep.
Yes, yes. You just be real careful with that you make sure you water it in. Don't let it sit dry there, especially in those containers.
Yep. Yeah. Okay, well, Gerald, you know, we have the two Rufus. The first one that came along was the solid yellow or yellow orange, and was beautiful, and I've forgotten what the other one was.
That was King Rufus the second, wasn't it?
Yeah, King Rufus the second.
green and purple is about three mutations in it already, but the other one was purple with some green in it.
Yeah. Well, mine turned out to be a yellowish.
Well, I'd like to see that because that would be – I hadn't seen one do that yet.
Yeah.
Sounds like Frankenstein's laboratory over there, Gerald.
Well
– all these mutations.
What happened, Craig, is I grew out Muddy Mamba, which is one of Millard Murdoch's tomato.
Yeah,
really. Sounds like a snake.
And the second year I saved seed, I had to look to find some seed. I saved seed out of the first year. And then the next year I had some odd things.
Yeah.
And so I've been saving seed, and there's a reddish orange one that's come out of all that, and it's just kind of been a mix. What fortunately has been good, they're all slice and size, and every one of them has tasted very good, so, and a little different looking.
Yeah, I'm actually pretty sad. It turns out Millard Murdoch grew his plants and did his work in Flat Rock, which is really close to us at the Carl Sandburg Center.
Right.
And he passed on just before we moved in.
Oh.
And I would have had a chance to meet him. He, his Captain Lucky and his Abraham Brown are two of the 10 slicer tomatoes that I chose to have in my garden this year. They are that good. So, he used Lucky Cross to do a lot of his work, and I'm not sure if he employed the bees and did serendipitous crossing or actually, you know, did the physical act of crossing, but his varieties are really, really wonderfully flavored.
Yeah, the Black Mamba of his is another one I had plants for this year. The Captain Lucky I had this year as well. Everything I've tried of his has been exceptional.
Yep. You know, I've
gotten to see a really interesting phenomenon this year that I suspected, but now I've kind of proven it to myself. At the farm nearby, we're in the ground this year, and it's getting 12 hours of direct sun. My backyard gets about 6 to 8 hours of direct sun. So the same varieties in my backyard that are 4 to 5 feet tall, in that garden at the farm, they're about 3 feet tall. So it's counterintuitive, and whenever I tell people this, they kind of shake their head. The more direct sun hour-wise your plants get, the more the shorter they're going to stay because they're not reaching for the sun. The less sun you get, the taller your plants are going to be. So it's just something to think about where you're looking in your yard where you want to plant your plants. The way to keep them the most compact is to really put them in the area where they're going to get the most sun.
Gerald, I wanted you to look at this. Richard sent this to me, and he said he's got some leaf curl, and he was wondering what it was. Before we take a break, I wanted to let you take a look at that.
It may not be anything. Sometimes when we go to this hot of weather, and in particular if you're not quite keeping the water to them like you should, you know, I guess would you call it a physiological problem, Craig?
When you have leaf curl?
Yeah, the plant just can't take the heat. Now, it would be a different matter if, you know, the leaves were turning colors, had spots on them. I'd be a lot more concerned. But if they're good and green and just starting to twist some, and especially if it's the younger, newer growth, on the tips doing it, I don't get quite so bent out about it, but I may look to water more frequently.
I don't see any
good to
spots.
Know what variety is. There are three types of leaf curl. One of them is genetic to the variety, and that would be Costoludo Genovese, Russo, Sicilian. They just curl their leaves no matter what. It's part of their genes. As Gerald said, it's a reaction to weather, and if you look at a tomato plant throughout the day and in different temperatures, the leaves will present themselves differently in terms of their curling. The other thing would be to look for aphids and sucking insects on the back of the leaves if it's neither of those first two things. Probably nothing. 90% of the time, it's nothing to worry about.
Yeah. All right. We'll take a break and be back with more. Craig LaHoulier is with us until 9. Gerald will be here till 11. Rufus, goodness only knows how long Rufus will hang in there with us as he travels through the the highways and the byways of North Carolina.
We're going past Junior Johnson's old house.
It's an old 20,000 square foot house sitting up there.
It's a house, right.
Yeah, beautiful place, really is. Okay, Brother Rufus and all, we'll be back here on the Weekend Gardener. It's 8:48. We're back on WPTF. Mike Raley here, along with Gerald Adams in the studio here at Highwoods. But we have Craig LaHoulier from Hendersonville, and Craig said it was, did you say it was in the 50s this morning, Craig? Or?
Yeah, pretty much the last 4 or 5 mornings it's been 56 to 58 when we've gotten up, and then it gets to about 84, 85 in the afternoon. So I'll take it.
Yeah, and Rufus is...
Heat
is
wave.
Marching forward. I don't know who's driving, but Rufus is marching forward through, coming back toward Raleigh after speaking to all the folks at Horn in the West in Boone. And you said it was cooler up there, too. Did you see any tomatoes?
Oh, my. I just left from 52 degrees this morning, and I'm now at 78 in Yadkinville. But, you know, Craig and my friend Gerald, there seems to be a tomato mania now in America.
I
go different places, and everybody I know is now trying tomatoes. One guy said, I have spent $50 to get $5 worth of tomatoes. And I said, well, look at it this way. How much money do you throw away a week on buying soap and junk food and garbage like that, and if it makes you feel good, do it. Everybody I talk to loves the idea of doing container planting.
Yeah.
I saw one of my friends yesterday had never planted a tomato before in his life, and he had about 28 Lowe's big tar buckets with holes punched in the bottom, and they look very, very healthy now. Obviously, like in your neck of the woods and mine, they're not going to start coming in, some of them, until August. You mentioned a moment ago that Tom wanted to know if he could plant. Well, a couple of Gerald's plants, I didn't put them where they would mature so quickly, and I'm looking for good tomatoes in August when almost nobody else has any down my way.
You know, tomatoes are, they build community, and you can tell stories with them. And, you know, Gerald, I'm sure, has this experience at the market because everybody wants to ask him what's his favorite, what are the stories behind it. There's really not many other crops we can grow that have such nostalgia, such variety, and it really does captivate people. You know, I do my Instagram lives at Friday afternoons at 4 o'clock for my yard. Yesterday, I demonstrated how to make your own tomato variety, but I have a couple of thousand people tuning into those from all over the world, and it's just it's a nice place to be. It's like a bubble of sanity in a world of insanity. That's the way I look at it.
This is on Instagram, right?
Yes, that's on Instagram.
And that's how people can contact you.
Yeah, they could, if they follow me at NC Tomato Man, they'll get a notification when I go live for my 45-minute shows on Friday afternoons. But they can also look on my Reels tab there and find all of the ones that I've done over the last 5 years.
Is that CraigLahulier.com?
It's at NC Tomato Man. So Instagram.
They found all of that on Instagram. All right.
Yeah, all of it's on Instagram, yep.
Craig, are you you growing any of the micro tomatoes?
You know, so many people are really into the micros, and number one, my lane has kind of been the dwarf project, and I didn't want to get spread too thin and step on toes of people who are working on those projects. But mostly, I tend to find that the very, very dense foliage leads to quite a bit of onset of disease. The fruit size is pretty small, and I haven't tasted any that knocked my socks off yet. So I think, to me, the micro dwarfs have a niche of people who are growing on balconies or sunny windowsills. I have friends who are just crazy about them, and I'm thinking, go for it. You know, that's your, if you want to play in that sandbox. It's not a sandbox I've dove into yet, let's just say. What do you think about them?
Well, I offered three varieties this year for the first time. I just tasted my first few here a few weeks back, and I'm growing out another two or three. And for that very reason you said, me, if you can't make a sandwich out of it, I generally speaking don't have a lot of use for it. But for that, I'm selling plants now, and people that are wanting something they think they might can grow indoors on their windowsill maybe, and it live in a, you know, got a little balcony, a tiny space outside. So I said, well, I'll try it and see. I'm like you. I'm trying to find one that I really like the flavor, because other than a few hybrids that I grow that have been around for 50-plus years that people ask for, I generally speaking grow plants to sell that I like the fruit.
Exactly.
And, well, you know, when you say micro, do you mean something tiny, between a Tommy Toe and a sandwich tomato? Is that what you mean?
We mean tiny plant. I mean, you could grow
English peas.
The plant itself's not going to get 15 inches tall and 12 or 15 inches wide. So a very small plant that you would grow in a really small container. And all of them do have cherry-sized fruit.
Well, I like the bacon-flavored tomatoes the best.
I haven't done that cross yet. I'll have to see.
Hey, Craig, all right, so NC Tomato Man on Instagram and CraigLahulier.com. And can you get an autograph book through CraigLahulier.com?
Best thing to do there is email me at nctomatoman@gmail.com. And I've got a pretty good deal going now. I send both of my books with some seeds for $25.
Oh, wow.
So people can, I always have them at home You know, it's been out 10 years. I wrote most of it 2012, 2013, so I'm kind of waiting for my publisher to say, time to update that, because you learn a lot every year you go.
Yeah, yeah, you really ought to. You really ought to. I know you're in the middle of another book, but...
Well, I've asked them, and they're like, it's still selling, so we can't put the expense into doing another one yet.
Oh, okay.
So I need to crowdsource a nagging of story publishing.
Epic Tomatoes, yeah.
Yeah.
Go ahead. We have about 20 seconds.
Okay. Nothing in the book is incorrect. It's just that I would love to include everything I've learned in the last 10 years.
Absolutely.
And that's why I do the Instagrams, is to essentially make the book live, share my latest findings, and you guys are all great. Being on this show is some of the most fun I have all year, so appreciative of the invitation.
Well, thank you, and we want to get you back in July, so we'll set that up. Fantastic. Yeah. Craig, thank you, buddy.
Yeah, thank you, buddy. And Gerald, nice to talk to you. Rufus,
you too.
Great. Have a great day, everybody.
We'll see you, Craig.
We'll be back.